So, yeah.
Thanks, Mary. So, if a farmer is lacking fungi, from what you just told us, is that basically he's got a huge deficit there, that or just
yes.
And so, well, it's just a ginormous deficit. It's so how? What's some of the ways that your farmers who've worked in with you have rectified this?
Well, what we've tried with the big broadacre farmers, what we're trying to get them to do is work the soil less, try and maintain much more of the organic matter from the previous crop or the intermediate crop, try and keep much more of that undisturbed on the soil surface, so that there's never ever a fallow situation, because fallow is not natural within nature. Every time there's a gap, nature tries to fill it with something. So for us to leave land bare is unnatural. So what we try to have our farmers do is never have their land bare, always have something on it, something growing on it. And if one continues to do that, then always there is a plant, living plant, on which the mycorrhizae can grow, establish and grow. And then when they're planting, we're trying to get them to plant at minimum tillage, so that they're actually planting into a living root system, basically, that's carrying the mycorrhizal fungi that can move across onto the you know, like a grass species like wheat or whatever it is that they're planting. And so in that way, always there is a living plant on the soil. There is the hyphae is only minimally disturbed, and so it means that always the mycorrhizal function, or the fungi that are functioning as mycorrhizae, always there, they're never lost, which is what happens if you over-till and you have fallow. So we have our farmers never have fallow. They move immediately from one crop to another, and they till as little as is possible, and leave a cover of plant material always with roots in the soil across the paddocks.
So basically, what we both understand is that the chemical fallow is not really a good idea. That farmers have got to go for something that will grow through that summer months when you want to protect the soil, or rather than using a chemical to fallow.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, many of the chemicals that are used are herbicides or fungicides. So if you use a herbicide, then you're killing, inverted commas, weed species, and weeds are really good mulch anyway. So if you're using a herbicide to kill off unwanted plants, then what you're doing is you're killing the roots that the mycorrhizae would be living on, because mycorrhizae can only live on living plant roots. So by using a herbicide, you're killing any plant, therefore you're losing your mycorrhizal fungi. If you use a fungicide, because you're saying, well, okay, I might have a carryover of a disease. Well, you only have a disease because the plant's unhealthy anyway, which is another story. But if you use a fungicide to kill a so-called pathogen, well, then all fungi, they're all affected by fungicides. I mean, the fungicide doesn't say, oh, I'm only just going to kill this one because it's a pathogen. No, they kill everything. So it means that all the beneficials are killed as well. So if a farmer uses a herbicide to get rid of weeds and then a fungicide, or vice versa, to get rid of a so-called pest fungi, then there's two situations where your beneficial fungi are being lost and your mycorrhizal fungi are being lost, and so that you've got a whole breakdown of one of the major components of plant health, and that's the mycorrhizal fungi that supply phosphorus for free, I might add, to the plants in plant-available form as the plant wants it.
Now that you talked on that particular subject, one of the questions West Australian farmers put was that there's a company over there who's done trials of different fungicides and different herbicides on the effect of on mycorrhizal fungi, and they found that a couple of the fungicides or herbicides, whatever they trialed, had no effect on the mycorrhizae. In other words, they're safe to use because it didn't affect the mycorrhizae. Could you imagine any commercial fungicide or herbicide safe enough for a farmer to use? And if they were to use them, would they do a trial on them somehow and working with your laboratory?
Yeah. Look, I can't imagine, because I can't see a chemical going into the ground and saying, oh my goodness, that piece of hyphae is a good guy, or that piece of hyphae is a bad guy, and being able to select. I can't intuitively think of any chemical that could do that. So, because I don't know what the products are, I can't say categorically, but if you just think about how can a chemical go into the soil or onto a plant environment and select one fungal hyphae against another. I mean, it doesn't make sense. And I guess if a grower, every product a grower uses and every time a grower wants to change their farming methods, I say, please talk to someone, you know, me or someone, and do a trial. Because a lot of products or a lot of management systems have to be adapted to particular farms or particular areas. And so this is where we do a lot of work with farmers. They say, look, you know, we would like to use this product, or we'd like to try and use a different system. And I say to them, okay, let's set up a trial. This year, let's just set up a trial. Let's do, you know, a row. If you're a vineyard, let's do a couple of rows. Or if you're a broadacre farmer, let's do one width of a planter. And actually have a look at what happens first. Just coming back to these products, I just can't intuitively see how a chemical can select one fungal hypha from another or one fungal spore from another. It just doesn't make sense to me. So I'd like to see the products and be able to see what, you know, what they are before I would say, you know, it could happen. It just doesn't make sense.
Well, a farmer could use the supposedly safe products and on a trial basis, like you say, on the particular, you know, certain area, and send a sample to your laboratory and just see whether, like a before and after.
Absolutely.
To see if they are as safe as they made it out to be.
Exactly. What we would say to that farmer or that grower is take a soil sample that represents the farm, the soil, the block or whatever it is that they're working on. Send that soil sample and we'll have a look at the chemistry. We would have a look at the soil food web, the biology that's functioning. We would have a look to see if there are any diseases that are important to the particular crop that's being grown. And then we would say, okay, choose an area that is representative of your farm but is not going to interfere with your normal cropping system, and try the products. And then at harvest time or at some time appropriate to the crop, do the same thing again. Send us another representative soil sample and we'll compare the two. Now, if there is no difference, then one would have to say, go ahead and trial it then on a larger area or on a block. It may well be safe to use. But that would be the way to go, is to do a very careful before and after. But I never say to anyone, if they're going to change a farming practice, to do it across the whole farm at the first instant. You've got to trial it, because there may be a weather pattern, there may be a soil type, there may be something that's going to be to cause that particular product not to function as the manufacturer suggests, and farmers can't afford to lose their whole production. So that's what you do. You do a small trial first, and then when the farmer feels comfortable, then he or she spreads out across the farm to a greater extent.
Now, Mary, thank you for that. We will open the lines, and if there is anyone who wants to ask a question, they can just start talking and interrupt us, because that way you can get that's why you can get your question out. Another question that has been asked is more and more farmers are interested in microscopes. So what can you tell them about microscopes? Where can they get them? What should they buy? Can you, and that sort of thing.
Yes.
And because some farmers already got microscopes, and then you might even talk about the courses that you people run on microscopes to support farmers.
Yes. Well, it's very useful to have a microscope, and there are companies that have quite reasonably priced microscopes. And on my website, because I don't promote anybody's product, I've got a series of contacts for different microscopes. But there are some really basic things that are absolutely essential. And I guess, like anything, you get what you pay for. But you shouldn't have to pay at the most with a microscope and a good digital camera, because I'll explain why that's important as well. Less than $2,000, you will get the very best. But there are a few things that are absolutely essential.
Can I interrupt you there? Yeah. That sort of money that you just made mention of, does that include the camera?
Yes.
Keep talking. Sorry.
Yes. No, that's okay. You can get microscopes down to $400 and $500, and cameras at about the same. For example, there are others that are better. As I say, you get what you pay for. You can pay, say, $1,000 or $1,200 for a really, really good microscope for a farmer's use, plus about $600 or $700 for a good digital camera. So there's a whole lot on my website. But as I was going to say, the things that you need to look for when you're buying a microscope, you need at least three objectives, which is 10 times, 20 times, and 40 times. You need at least those three. Now, if you're going to get a better microscope and you buy an oil immersion, then that's fine, but at least those three, 10 times, 20 times, and 40 times. The other thing that's really important is that you get an adjustable light system, because some lights are fixed and you can't adjust the intensity, and they are no good for looking at microbes in a water preparation or a compost tea, because you need to be able to manipulate the intensity of the light to be able to see these tiny little bacteria that are, you know, only a micron or two in diameter. So two things. Three objectives. Absolutely essential is an adjustable light source. And what is really useful is if you can have a movable stage, which is where the area of the microscope where you sit the microscope slide, if you can move that around with a little lever rather than having to move it with your fingers. So I'll just summarize. Three objectives, 10 times, 20 times, 40 times, an adjustable light source so that you can adjust the intensity of the light, and preferably a movable stage so that you can get a fine adjustment when you're moving the microscope slide rather than having to move it with your fingers. Now, if you can get a microscope with those three things on it, then that's what you want for just, you know, your work at home. It would be good if it could have a trinocular head, which means you have the two eye pieces plus the third ocular to be able to sit your digital camera on. Now, one would say, why a digital camera? Well, again, on my site, I have a facility there where people can register, and they'll take a photograph of either down their microscope or of their diseased tree or plant or whatever, and send it in to me, and I will identify it if I can from the photograph. And if it's a good photograph, then I put it on this website with my description, and everybody who is registered on that website can have a look at everybody, all of this information that's coming in. So they may not even have to ask the question. It might already have been asked in there. So microscopes with a digital camera are very useful, are readily available, as long as you look at those three components that really are essential.
That's a fantastic service that you are offering farmers. Now,
well, we also do little workshops. I mean, we do one-on-one workshops, but we also do group workshops on how to use a microscope, how to be able to adjust the light so that you get the maximum benefit from your microscope, how to take your photographs, and then, as I say, one-on-one or with groups. We do it here at the lab if it's only three or four or five people, or when we're having workshops, if we're making compost or compost tea, doing those workshops, then we actually can have up to about 15 people with microscopes learning how to use them, so that they can go home, and then they can, if they want to, register on my website and start to be a member of that group of people. So we're fairly adaptable. It's really a case of really getting farmers interested in trying to do their own work. They can send stuff into me, and I can charge them money for it, but how much better is it if I can have them learn to do it themselves, then they just ask for my help when they need it. That's what I try to do.
Well, that's very generous of you to do that. It is very
Thank
generous.
You.